This week's Shia Bahar B'Chukotai is dedicating loving memory of Yosef Herzer from Olive Racha by his family on the occasion of his 40th Yortzeit. I had mentioned in the past that Yosef Herzer was a student in the yeshiva and that I spent a quality time with Yosef because I used to give a Shia Thursday night in the yeshiva and drive back to Yerushalayim, and he would always come with me. And we discussed the future of the Jewish people that he wanted to take. He had already spent a year working for the joint in Western Europe. And he wanted to do things like that in his lifetime, and it was a great loss when he passed on. And so I appreciate the fact that his family is keeping the memory alive through this shir. In any event, the first pasuk in our parasha is by the Be'er Shem Moshe, Bahar Sinai Lemor. And this was always a bit problematic because it didn't seem to the readers of the Torah that Bnei Yisrael was still Bahar Sinai. Especially since, I'm sorry I didn't put it on the sheet, but the first pasuk in Vayikra, I mean, you remember the order of things, right? Shemot, the second part of Shemot, is about building the Mishkan. Assuming that they built the Mishkan and it was ready to go, most of the book of Vayikra is about Mishkan-related things, Kohanim-related things, Tum'ah v'Tahara-related things. All of those things sort of make a package. And while there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, that's the book of Vayikra. Now, the book of Vayikra, the first pasuk in the book of Vayikra says, Vayikra Moshe, Vayidaber Elav. And then the place that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu was Be'ohel Moed. Now, Ohel Moed, as far as we know, became part of the Mishkan. And so when the Mishkan moved around in the desert, Ohel Moed also moved around in the desert. So Ohel Moed and Har Sinai are not the same place. I mean, that's the point. And here at the beginning of Bahar, the beginning of the Parsha Bahar, it says this is taking place, Bahar Sinai. And then the last pasuk in the Parsha Bechukotai, this year we're reading Bahar Bechukotai together, the last pasuk in Bechukotai, which is the last pasuk of the book of Vayikra, is, if you look at the bottom of the sheet, Eila ha-mitzvot asher tziva Hashem et Moshe el b'nei Yisrael Bahar Sinai. Again, Bahar Sinai. So the first pasuk in this week's parasha, Bahar Sinai, and the last pasuk in this week's parasha, it's two parashiyot shonot, but it's the last pasuk also emphasizes this idea of Bahar Sinai, which seems wrong. In other words, it was Ba'ohel Moed. It wasn't Bahar Sinai. Bahar Sinai, Bnei Yisrael learned very little of the Torah. Bnei Yisrael. There's Bnei Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu, like two different entities. But Bnei Yisrael, they learned the Aseret HaDibrot. Not according to Chazal, not all of the Aseret HaDibrot, but just the first two Dibrot. Then Moshe Rabbeinu taught them the rest of the Aseret HaDibrot when he came down from the mountain. So Bnei Yisrael learned very little at Har Sinai itself. Moshe Rabbeinu, who was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, I guess learned a lot more. We'll see what Rashi thinks that he learned. But the idea that all of this Torah, which starts from the building of the Mishkan in Shemot through the entire book of Vayikra, that it was all in Bahar Sinai, just doesn't seem right to us. And just before we look at the Rashi, the second pasuk in this parasha, you see at the top of the page, "Daber b'nei Yisrael amata lehem ki tavo la'aretz asher ni notei lachem, ki tavo la'aretz, v'shavta ha'aretz shabbat l'ashem." Vishavta Haaretz Shabbat Lashem. This is the introduction to a whole slew of psukim about Shemitah. And of course, Shemitah is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. So the parasha of Behar is largely about Shemitah. And the parasha of Bechukotai, right, the next parasha, has that covenant between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael, which is applicable also on the eve of them going into Har Sinai. So in some way, the book of Vayikra, the end of the book of Vayikra, is kind of the theoretical end of the Torah. It could have ended there, at least some level of it, and then the Jews would have gone into Eretz Yisrael. But because of the Meraglim, because of what happened, right, it's true that it's a few parashiyot later, right? Bamidbar, Naso, Bahalotcha, Shlach. Bamidbar, Naso, Bahalotcha, Shlach. Those are the first four parashiyot of the book of Bamidbar. The story of the Meraglim and the rejection of Eretz Yisrael took place in the parasha of Shlach. Shlach lecha anashim. Send spies. The spies came back and they said, it's not a good deal. We shouldn't go. And that was the punishment for the Meraglim. The punishment was the 38 years that they spent in the desert draying around. Right? And during those 38 years, as far as we understand, Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Torah to Bnei Yisrael during those 38 years. So the parasha again says, our parasha, Behar, he says, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Behar Sinai. So we have a problem with the idea of Har Sinai. Following that pasuk comes a whole parasha, a very long parasha with details about Shemitah. And the reason that the Torah gives for teaching about Shemitah is because because you're about to go to Eretz Yisrael. And because you're about to go to Eretz Yisrael, there's a covenant in the parasha of Bechukotai, which apparently, the way we understand it is, was rejected. The agreement was rejected by Bnei Yisrael. The rejection of the agreement in Bechukotai came later on in the parasha of Shlach, the parasha of the Meraglim. Because the Bechukotai says, if you go to Eretz Yisrael, you do what you're supposed to do, then everything will be good. And if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're going to get zapped. And the zapping of Bnei Yisrael is clearly stated in Bechukotai, pasuk after pasuk after pasuk. So this covenant, this agreement that God made with Bnei Yisrael in the parasha of Bechukotai, which we call a tochacha, we call it like, tochacha is like an interdiction, it's like a bad thing, because there's so many psukim which describe the bad of it, right? There are all these psukim. We call it a tochacha. That whole agreement seems to have been rejected by Bnei Yisrael because it was conditional upon going into Eretz Yisrael. And since the Jews did not go into Eretz Yisrael, so the covenant of Bechukotai was to a certain extent rejected. And that covenant was re-established again before Bnei Yisrael went into Eretz Yisrael. In which parasha was re-established? The parasha of Ki Tavo at the end of the book of Dvarim. The end of the book, in other words, they were supposed to go to Eretz Yisrael after the book of Vayikra. But they didn't. And because of that, we have also the book of Bamidbar and Dvarim, which were created through the agency of Moshe Rabbeinu. And then, since the agreement in Bechukotai was rejected, so to speak, it was re-established. Not exactly identical. I mean, that's something worth looking into, but not today. He says the covenant that was rejected at the end of the book of Vayikra was re-established between God and Bnei Yisrael at the end of the book of Dvarim. And after the Book of Dvarim, after that covenant was reestablished, the Book of Dvarim, then B'nai Yisrael did in fact enter Eretz Yisrael under the leadership of Yoshua ben Nun. Okay? You got all that? I mean, it's the way it is. The way it is. When I say that the covenant number one was rejected, I base that on the fact that there's covenant number two. Like, why would you need covenant number two if you had still had covenant number one? And secondly, because the covenants that were made with B'nai Yisrael in the desert were conditional upon them entering Eretz Yisrael. And that's what Bahar is, right? The first two psukim that I quoted here, Bahar Sinai, Daber B'nai Yisrael Matalehem Ki Tavo El Haaretz. When you come to the land, why did the Torah say Ki Tavo El Haaretz? Because they're about to come to Eretz Yisrael. This is actually what's supposed to happen. Ki Tavo El Haaretz V'Shavta Haaretz. Shabbat, Shabbat Lashem. Shavta Haaretz means Shemitah. And then the Shemitah is described at great length. At great length. Okay? Now Rashi, this Rashi is not so, there's a certain lack of clarity in the Rashi, which I don't think I'm going to be able to deal with. But there's enough of the Rashi that's understandable. Rashi asked the question, Ma inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai? That's a famous question, which is adopted in modern Hebrew. Like if you say something stupid, the readers of Haaretz would say, Ma inyan Shemitah Har Sinai? The readers of other newspapers wouldn't say that. Ma inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai? It's a question. What's the connection in the two pasukim? One pasuk says this took place by Har Sinai, and the other pasuk says here are the laws of Shemitah. Alo kol ha-mitzvot nemru b'Sinai. Now this may be an important statement that Rashi says. Kol ha-mitzvot nemru b'Sinai. In other words, the Torah itself is a compilation of two elements. It's almost like in the Gemara they say there's halakha and there's agada. Right? What's the difference between halakha and agada? Halakha is for engineers and agada is for poets. That's the difference. But they both deal with the same issues. Doing the right thing and not doing the wrong thing. Isn't that what halakha is about? Halakha will tell you how high the sukkah has to be, how close the schach has to be, the leaves have to be to each other, when you're supposed to build the sukkah, when is this year's sukkah, not last year, there's all engineering type questions. Or today maybe we say computer questions. But the agadah in the Torah, the agadah is, what happens, why it's better to sit in the sukkah and Sukkot, what happens when you do it, tell me a story about somebody who did something, was benefited from sitting in the sukkah. But what stands behind these two ideas, the halakha of it and the agada of it, is how important it is to live according to the Torah principles. Right? Now, of course, there are some deviations, yes, I know. But broadly speaking, that's what Jewish literature is. It's a combination of halakha and agadah. We call it agadah. Agadah may not be such a good name. So this is true for us because we have Gemara. We also have the Chumash. The Chumash has halakha in it and agadah in it. For example, all these psukim about Shemitah, that's halakha. The story of Bil'am, that's agadah. That's a story of a bad guy, about how you shouldn't be, about what you should be concerned about. I mean, those stories, that's agadah. The same thing is true about Korach. The same thing is true about Paro. The same thing is true about all kinds of their stories. But those stories are about living the cherished life. That's what those stories are about. Now, when you say that the Torah is from Sinai, so Rashi says, Beferish, he says, Alo kol ha-mitzvot, Nemru b'Sinai. Kol ha-mitzvot ne'emru mi-sinai. Now we have this idea, which comes from the Medrash, that the Torah pre-existed the created world. The Torah pre-existed the created world, and God looked into the Torah and created the world. Right? Istakel ba'oraita ubara alma. That's what the Medrash says, and it's copied also, of course, in Kabbalistic works as well. I mean, later. The Medrash is earlier. Istakel ba'oraita ubara alma. Now that Torah that God looked into and with which he created the world, was it the Torah of Halakha or the Torah of Agadah, or was it both together? So it seems to me that it must have been the Torah of Halakha. That's what Hashem, that for God, Torah is the right way to live. It's not ideas about the right way to live, but it's the right way to live. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai and learned Kol HaTorah Kula, supposedly, which Torah did he learn? So I find it hard. I mean, I wouldn't say that I know the answer to this question. I mean, you could say anything you want about what I'm saying here tonight, but don't say that I said I know the answer, because I don't know the answer. But it seems to me that Moshe Rabbeinu learned the whole Torah in Har Sinai. He did not learn the parasha of Bilam. He did not learn the parasha about Korach. He learned all the mitzvot that we call Torah. But history is not that way. After all, in history, we all assume somehow there's free will. And free will means that we decide somehow. So I know that even if we decide, God knows, I know all that. Right? And I can't answer that. I mean, I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You can say whatever you want. But it seems to me that when Rashi says, Halo kol ha-mitzvot ne'emru mi-sinai, that he means the mitzvot, and not the other part of the Torah. The stories of Bereshit, Rashi says in the Chumash, were known to Bnei Yisrael before Matan Torah. It was what the form of this knowledge was is not made clear by Rashi. But Rashi just says that all of Bnei Yisrael knew about Avraham and about Yitzchak and Yaakov and what happened to them, where they went, and where they, you know, it could have been like an oral history, like like stories that we all knew, that we passed on from in our families, right? But
where did Rashi say that?
In Shmos Perek Yutes. No, in Mishpatim, I'm sorry. At the end of Mishpatim, Rashi said. So, now here, Mashvita ne'emra klalotel pratotel v'dikdukeh mi-sinai, avkulam ne'emru klalotel v'dikdukeh mi-sinai. So it seems that there was some kind of a question. When you say that Moshe Rabbeinu learned all the mitzvot of the Torah, did he learn that there was such a mitzvah, but not learn all of the details? For example, the mitzvah of Shabbat, which everybody knows is a very intricate mitzvah. It's got a lot of details, to say the least. If you ever looked at a summarizing book like Shmirat Shabbat Yelchita, you'd see endless details, and literally, endless details. So when you say that Moshe Rabbeinu, but in the Torah Shebichtav, Shabbat hardly mentioned, I mean, it's mentioned many times, but there are very few details about Shabbat in the Torah. The only thing it says is, Lo tevaru eish b'kol moshvoteichem, that you shouldn't light a fire on Shabbat. But it doesn't say that you can't tie a knot, or that you can't write with a pencil, or that you can or cannot play with little Lego pieces, right? All of that's missing from the Chumash. So you have two kinds of mitzvot. Most of the mitzvot are stated in a more general way, and the details are left out. Shemitah is an exception, because it's stated in a general way in the Parashah of Mishpatim, here. Where is it? Yeah, you see, on the Shmot Perikav Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph, you see where it says that? It says, Hashvi'it, Tishbetena, V'natashta, V'achlu Avyonei Amcha, the poor people will eat, V'yitram Tochal Chayat HaSadeh, Keita Tzeh L'kar Mechal HaSadeh. That's about the seventh year, you have to let everything alone. You have to let it be. In fact, everything becomes Hefker. The poor people can come and take whatever they want. You can take a couple of meals worth of food at a time. We can't take all the stuff away and prevent the poor people from getting at it. This is the Pasuk of Shemitah that's mentioned in the Parasha of Mishpatim. And the Parasha of Mishpatim is the material that Moshe Rabbeinu taught to Bnei Yisrael. He learned that. When he was on Har Sinai, he taught the Bnei Yisrael in order that they should be able to have some Torah in their minds when they come to accept the Torah. It was they didn't know all of the Torah, but they had learned the Parasha of Mishpatim. So in the Parasha of Mishpatim, there's one pasuk that says Shemitah. And that one pasuk is a cloud. It's the general statement about it. And where are the Pratim? Here, in the parasha of Bahar. So Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, he says, Mashmita Nemra, Kualotel Pratel V'diktukel, Mi Sinai. How do you know that they're Mi Sinai? Because it says Bahar Sinai, right here. I mean, that's the point. The point is that these details about Shemitah, which appear at the end of the book of Vayikra, are just as Har Sinai oriented as the pasuk in Mishpatim about Shemitah. And that, in turn, is true about everything. So that at Har Sinai, or someplace, Moshe Rabbeinu learned about Shabbat, but he also learned the details. He also learned all of the details. Rashi, Af kulam nanu kalatem v'diktukei misinah, kulam refers to all the mitzvot. Kach shnuya b'torat kohanim. Kach shnuya b'torat kohanim. Torat kohanim is the Midrash Halakha of the book of Vayikra. Right? Midrash Halakha. It's a commentary, pasuk by pasuk, very similar. The content is often very similar to the Mishnah, but the Mishnah generally doesn't quote psukim. It just tells you the halachic facts, whereas the Midrash is built on the psukim. It says, here's the pasuk, and here's what it teaches us. And the order in the Midrash is the order of the psukim, not as it is in the Mishnah, which is compiled by topic. Right? So you have a Mishnah, all the Mishnayot about Shabbat. Right? They're not all about Shabbat, but 90% of them are about Shabbat. Apparently, in putting all these... Oh, that's a different thing. Kach shnuya b'torat kohanim. V'nireh li... Shekein Perusha. This is what I think the Torah Kohanim means. The Fisha Lomatsinu Shmitat Karkaot Shenishnet Barvot Moav V'Mishnet Torah. So you know, Arvot Moav is where Bnei Yisrael were on the eve of entering into Eretz Yisrael. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu made his final speeches in the book of Dvarim. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu died, but all of that is Arvot Moav, right? If you in your mind's eye you see the Jordan River, and you see Jericho. If you go east across the Jordan River, right into Jordan, what is today Jordan? That's Arvot Moav. That's where Arvot Moav is. So they were standing ready to go into Eretz Yisrael, and you know that the Book of Dvarim, to some extent, is repetitive. It has some things in it that we know already. It's Moshe Rabbeinu teaching the Torah over again. He says, "Shelomatzinu shmitat karkot shenishnet ba'arvot moav b'mishnei Torah." We didn't. There is no mention of shmitah in Arvot Moav when Moshe Rabbeinu kind of reviewed certain things in the Torah. Lamadnu. Sheklaloteha upratoteha kulam ne'emru mi Sinai. So there was some kind of a question. If there's new material There's new material in Arvot Moav. At the end of Dvarim, there's something the laws of divorce in Parashat Ki Tetzeh. Parashat Ki Tetzeh is full of mitzvot, right? The end of Dvarim. So that mitzvot we haven't learned before. We only know them from the Parashah of Ki Tetzeh. So maybe that means that they were not from Sinai, whatever's in there. So the Medrash says, according to Rashi, that so why is it that at the end of Dvarim there's no mention of Shemitah? The reason there's no mention of Shemitah is because we shouldn't be confused to think that Shemitah came from Moshe Rabbeinu at a later date, but it all comes from Har Sinai. So we're left with the question of what this means. What do you mean it's all from Sinai, from Har Sinai? It can't all be from Har Sinai. As far as Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned, I offer the idea that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu learned the mitzvot, but he didn't learn the histories. He didn't learn about Bilam. He didn't learn about Korach. That doesn't seem to be reasonable. And then, we know also that Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Torah to Bnei Yisrael during the 38-year sojourn in the desert. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu would call him into the Ohel Moed and teach him another parasha in the Torah. Then he would go out and he would gather everybody together and they would learn the Torah that he had just learned. He would learn again. He would learn with the people. Right? That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, that there was Moshe and Aaron and Yoshua and the Skenim. And Moshe taught the Torah, and then he left, and then Aaron taught the Torah twice, and the Skenim taught the Torah three times. And that's how the Torah got to Bnei Yisrael. Now it is possible that Moshe learned a super Torah on Har Sinai, which contained the mitzvot, like the will of God. Mitzvot are the will of God, as opposed to Bilam, which is the anti-will of God, right? Why would that be in the Torah? So that's what he says. Now look at the... let's look at the Parim Yafot. Parim Yafot is a Perush, right? It's a Perush on the Torah, on the Medrash, you know, on Kabbalah. It's like all good things. Kvar Peresh Rashi v'Ramban Zal delamdu Sha'ar Mitzvot mi-Mitzvat Shmita. Both Rashi and the Ramban, who we didn't quote, they both agree that Shemitah is a kind of prototype. Just like Shemitah, so too all the mitzvot. What is Shemitah like? What is Shemitah? Shemitah is klalotehu pratateha amisinai. So just like Shemitah, so too all the mitzvot of the Torah. Ach, mashikatva Torah, ze gabei Shemitah v'yovel, v'lo b'sha'ar mitzvot, right? But it would seem that the Torah specifically mentioned this principle in the context of Shemitah, but not any other mitzvah. Near 8, l'fima de'ita. So he says, how come? You know, it's like it's a question. So how come Shemitah was chosen to become the model for all the mitzvot in the Torah? What's so important about Shemitah? Like, we learned the parasha, we said, look, Shemitah is a basic mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael. And here they are about to go to Eretz Yisrael, here at the end of Vayikra. They didn't go, but in theory, they're about to go to Eretz Yisrael. He says, l'fiman de'ita sofer kamen de kedusha. This is like people who are very smart can do this. They can say, this problem is solved by looking at this other place in the Talmud someplace. That's what he was able to do. So he says, so perakama de kedush, the end of the first perak, Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gadol Limud. Rabbi Yossi said, Limud Torah is even greater than Maaseh. It's greater to learn the Torah than to do the Torah. That's what he said. Now that's odd. It would seem to us to be odd, right? Why should it be greater to learn the Torah and not do it? That seems heretical almost. If you learn the Torah says you do something, so you should do it. Why would he say gadol limud shekodem lekodem lechala arba'im shana? Before they had to actually give chala, you know the mitzvah of chala. If you have an isa, you have a dough that's this big, some big 2 kilo or something. You have to give some of it, take off some of it as a matana. Usually at homes this doesn't come up that often, because 2 kilo. I'm sorry, no, I said 2 pounds. 2 kilo of dough is a lot, but in bakeries they have that problem. Not a problem, but they have they're always these proverbial ancient ladies who come in and do that mitzvah. You can go to Angel very early in the morning and you'll find her there. So Rabbi Yossi Omer Gadol Limud Torah Shekodem Lechala Arba'im Shana, before they ever had to do the mitzvah of Chala, 40 years passed. Where are the 40 years? The 40 years in the desert. It was their learning Torah. They're learning Torah in the desert, so they're learning about Chala. But they're eating man. So man is miracle food. Now you don't take challah from man. I mean, it's nothing. It's nothing that you can describe. It doesn't have a name, the man. And it tastes like anything you're interested in it tasting like, which apparently is advantageous. But you don't take challah from the man. So, but you learned the Torah of challah 40 shana before you had to actually do it. Because you didn't have to do it until you came to Eretz Yisrael and grew and got wheat someplace. The Trumot Masrot, Chamishim v'arba. What's the added 14 years? Kibush v'nachala. That means they had to conquer Eretz Yisrael and divide it up. You had to get property and then grow something in your property in Eretz Yisrael to be chayav Trumot Masrot. L'shmita samach aleph. You had to wait another 7 years after the kibush v'nachala. And until you did Shemitah, and Liyovlot me'al shalosh, it's another 50 years, afterwards. So, okay, so here's Rabbi Yossi. He says, we're all learning all this Torah, but we're not doing it. We're not doing it because we can't do it. It's not like when you get driven, we got driven out of Eretz Yisrael, so we couldn't do the mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz. He says, that's different because that's a punishment. That's something that we brought upon ourselves. But here, the Ponim Yofo says, look at this. This is the way it was. How did the Torah come to Bnei Yisrael? As a theory. It was a theory of all the people who died in the desert. All the people, they deserved to die, so they died in the desert, but they learned Torah before they died. So for them, there was never a lema'aseh, it never happened that they did the mitzvot. They never did the mitzvot. They just learned the Torah about those mitzvot. It wasn't until many years later that the opportunity to actually do the mitzvah came up. So this is all about mitzvot atliyot ba'aretz, right? So he says, וכיוון שבא כתוב ללמד כדברי רבי עקיבא דפליגה על רבי ישמעאל פרק בתרא דזבחין, there's a מחלוקת רבי עקיבא and רבי ישמעאל, the sphere lay, כללות נאמרו בסיני ופרטות באוהל מועד, that according to רבי עקיבא the general things were told in Sinai and pratot ba'ol moed, which is what we were saying all the time. V'hainu mashe ne'emar parashat ha-mo'adim. He says, for example, think about the parashiyot in the Torah that describe the korbanot that you bring on holidays. B'seder zeh b'lashon klal. V'krafta mishev l'ashem. You see that first off, the Torah says something like V'kraftem, you all should bring a sacrifice to God. But it doesn't tell you what those sacrifices are. So that's a klal. That's a klal. You have to bring sacrifices. Then in Parashat Pinchas, Mefarash Korbanot Shel Kol Chag V'Chag V'Pratut. And later on in the parasha Pinchas, it gives you details about what you bring, is what animals you bring, and a korban mincha that you bring, and a ketoret that you bring. All of that is in the parasha of Pinchas. V'savar Rabbi Yishmael shelo nemru apratim ela bizman shehigia lasot ha-maaseh. Was a great idea. So Rabbi Yishmael says, what's a klal and what's a prat? A klal is when you can't do the mitzvah yet, because it's just not possible. It's not possible you do the mitzvah. So you can't do the mitzvah of challah in the desert. You can't do that mitzvah, because in the desert they ate man, and man has nothing to do with the mitzvah of challah. So what you do is, in the desert, you can't do the mitzvah of challah, but you could learn about it. So what is learning about a mitzvah that you're not going to do called? It's called klal. You learn it in general. You learn it in a general way. But when the time comes, to actually do it, then it says da'igel lasot ha'maaseh. Then you need the pratim. So in the parasha Pinchas comes after the parashat Emor, right? The parashat Emor talks about the korbanot that you bring on the Moadim in general, and the parashat Pinchas gives you greater detail. So that's klal and that's prat. The kaimelan k'Rabbi Akiva, but we hold like Rabbi Akiva. The Amar shekvar ne'emar b'Sinai kol ha'pratim ela shenish neit be'ol mo'ed b'sha'a she'igi etzman ha'maaseh. Rabbi Akiva disagrees with Rabbi Yishmael. Again, Rabbi Yishmael is the one who said, first the klalim are given, and then later on, when it becomes real time, then there's the pratim. Rabbi Akiva says, no. Rabbi Akiva says, the klalim and the pratim were taught to Bnei Yisrael the klalim and the pratim were taught to Bnei Yisrael in Har Sinai. But when the time came to actually do the mitzvah, do these mitzvot, then it was an add-on, you know, another explanation of the mitzvah and the pratim of that mitzvah. L'chach kitiv gabei shmita v'yovlot av shaya galui v'yadua l'pnei Hashem yitvarash lo yagiyo amaseh ad Samach Aleph Vekuv Gimul. Everybody, even though God knew for sure that it would take another 60 years or 100 years until they do the mitzvot of Shemitah and Yovel, Mikol Makom Amar Kol HaPratim Miyad B'Sinai. This is amazing. These Tanaim, they have a machloket, according to the interpretation of the Yifeinayim. He says they have a machloket about what the Torah that was given at Sinai was, and what the words klal uprat mean. They don't just mean the general and the specific, but they mean that you learned as much, according to Rabbi Yishmael, that you learned as much Torah as you could absorb, as much Torah as you could learn. But when it came to the details of doing it, well, you couldn't do it, so you didn't learn that Torah. You didn't learn that Torah until you were able to actually do it. So from this we learn about all the mitzvot. Shehigia zmanam kodem shepritehem neemru misinai. V'nireh hatam bazeh dav shelo higia zmanam maaseh. V'nireh hatam bazeh, according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Akiva again. What did they learn at Sinai? Klal and prat. Even though the time to actually do the mitzvah had not yet come. But they learned how to do the mitzvah. So he's going to explain why this is important, why you had to learn about the pratim of the mitzvah. So he says, Nireh, tam bazeh, da'av shelo higia zman ha-maaseh, mikol makom kol ha-osek b'parasha, kilu kiyemah, kemo shekadu b'sof menachot, bekol makom muktar u'mugash lishmi. Eilu talmidei chachamim. So we'll see that in a minute. Muktar u'mugash lishmi. Muktar, Torah, mugash, brought forth to the name of God. And what is the reference? We'll see it in a second. So he says what we all say, we all know, right? Every morning we get up in the morning and we say Birkat HaTorah. Yes? You may have noticed that this is an obligation equally relevant to men and to women. Because women have to learn Torah. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. And so everybody makes the bracha Birkat HaTorah. Now when you make the bracha Birkat HaTorah, you don't have to learn Torah. You have all day. It's like a bracha that goes for the whole day. But because we're like a little nervous about things, so we say, okay, but we're going to learn something. We'll learn something right away. Right? So what do we learn? We learn the parsha of the Korban Tamid. We learn the parshiot, or several parshiot, that are connected to giving the daily sacrifice. Right? The Tamid we give in the morning and the afternoon. That's what's in every Siddur. Every Siddur, I know that sometimes you come a few minutes late to shul, or you think yourself into a state of being a few minutes late, and you skip that part. But even if you skip it, it's there anyway. I mean, there's no doubt that it's there. You know, you're not going to rip it out, are you? It's there. So why is it there? Why do we say that? Because the Gemara says that even though the Gemara says it in several places. He quotes the Gemara Menachot at the end of Menachot. The Gemara says that if you can't bring the Korban, you can't bring the Korbanot that you have to bring, because there's no Beit HaMikdash, but you could learn the Torah of the Korbanot. You could learn the Torah of the Korbanot. And this is what Avram Avinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember Avram Avinu? He said, Vama Eida Ki Irashena. When God said to Avram Avinu, you're going to have a lot of progeny, Avram Avinu didn't say a thing. He said, okay, no problem. I mean, I believe it. But when God said to Avram Avinu, you're going to get Eretz Yisrael, he said, Bameh Eida Ki Irashena. And the Gemara in Ta'anit explains, the Gemara is quoted by Rashi on that pasuk. I don't remember the number of the pasuk, but you could find it. Berek Tezbov. Perek Tezvav and Bereshis. God says to Moshe, you're going to inherit the land. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, what if my children are not worthy? What if they... So you're going to kick them out of Eretz Yisrael, right? And that's going to be the first punishment that Bnei Israel get. They'll be kicked out. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says... So it's a longer story. What if they're not worthy of the Beit HaMikdash, and then it's destroyed, and then they're kicked out? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but if they learn the parshiot of the Korbanot, if they study those parshiot, then they will still be connected, and they'll still be worthy of Eretz Yisrael, even if they get kicked out. So that's what we do. That's what we do. We learn the parshiot. We learned the parshiot of the Korbanot, which we cannot give, for two reasons. One, because we learned Torah, right? We said the Birkat HaTorah, so we'll learn a little Torah. You know that we learn, it's a Mishnah. Eizem Mekol Manchel Zvachim is a Mishnah. Now we say in Psukei Dezimra, but you have to understand, Psukei Dezimra, right, which happens after Tfilas HaShachar, right, Psukei Dezimra, we say Tehillim. Right, Tehillim and what Tehillim and what Tehillim and what Tehillim doesn't count. Tehillim is not, you don't get credit for Talmud Torah when you read Tehillim. Tehillim is not a mind bender. It's like, you know, it's all good. It doesn't matter what you say when you say Tehillim. It's all the best of the best. But it's not Talmud Torah. The Nefesh HaChaim points this out in the beginning. In the beginning of the fourth section of Nefesh HaChaim, the Nefesh HaChaim points this out. And so you have to learn Mishnah, or you have to learn Gemara, to learn Talmud Torah. Right? So I say the women are included. So he says, what difference does it make if they could do the mitzvah, they can't do the mitzvah yet? They could learn the Torah of the mitzvah. And by learning the Torah of the mitzvah, they're accredited with doing the mitzvah. Because how can you compare knowing the mitzvah to doing the mitzvah? The Nefesh HaChaim carried it even further. The Nefesh HaChaim said if you learn Torah, it doesn't matter what Torah you learn. It doesn't matter what Daf Gemara you're up to. You'll do the mitzvah of lulav better. I mean, even if you're learning Torah about eating a piece of matzah, you'll do the mitzvah of lulav better. Because Torah changes your perspective on things. It doesn't matter what it is. It's true, if I learn, if I have to do the mitzvah of lulav, and I learn more about lulav, that's certainly a good thing. He didn't mean that that wasn't. He meant that learning Torah changes the way you are. And when it changes the way you are, so you do the other mitzvah, any mitzvah that you're going to do, you're going to do better. That was the position of the Nefesh HaChayim. So he says, okay, so now just we'll stop here for a minute. So you understand, he said something about klal and prat. Klal is the mitzvah in general, and prat is the mitzvah in detail. There's a machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael about whether you should, what came at Sinai. According to Rabbi Akiva, everything came at Sinai, and then when they needed to do the mitzvah practically, it was repeated in the Torah. It was repeated, that's called Pratatea. But where does it all come from? Har Sinai. It was all from Har Sinai. Now there is this pasuk. This is a pasuk in Malachi. You see the pasuk that's quoted by the Yifei Nayim. You see it over here? You see Malachi Perak Aleph, pasuk Yud Aleph? Yes? No? Ki mimizrach shemesh, right where the sun rises, ad mevo'o, until it sets. Gadol shmi bagoyim, my name is great amongst the nations. V'kol makom muktar mugash lishmi. Every place there's a incense sacrifice. Mugash lishmi, for my name. U'mincha tahora, and a meal offering, a pure meal offering. Gadol shmi bagoyim. Amar Hashem Tzvachot. So my name is great amongst the Goyim, because even amongst the Goyim there are these sacrifices that are given. Now Rashi. This is the Rashi to Malachi. Right? The Rashi to Malachi. Malachi. One of the Treyasar. Treyasar is 12 little books, which used to be bound together because it was a good way not to lose them. Treyasar. Amru Rabotenu, the Karolei Alaha de Alahaya. He is called the God of Gods. Afilu Mishieshlo Akum, even a non-Jew, Yodea, Sheyesh Eloka, Shehu Al Kulam. He knows, even Goyim believe that there is one God, one supreme God. V'chol Makom Mitnadvim Lishmi. And they nevertheless, they give, they offer sacrifices to my name, Afa Akum, even the non-Jews. Rabotenu Pirshu, and there's another interpretation of this pasuk. Right? What Rashi just said was sort of like the simple interpretation, that since the Goyim understand that they may worship many gods, but they know there is one God that is the superior God, the God of gods. And they serve him as well. Rabotenu Pirshu, there's another comment. Eilu Talmidei Chachamim Oskim B'Halchot Avodah B'Kol Makom. These are scholars, Talmidei Chachamim, who deal with Oskim B'Halchot Avodah, the laws of the service in the temple, the kol makom, wherever they happen to be, v'chein kol tefilot Yisrael shemitpalalim b'kol makom, and all the davening that Jews daven in any place where they are. This is Rashi, right? Harei hein li k'mincha tahorat. All those tefilot are to me, to God, like a pure meal offering. V'chein tirgem Yonatan, that the Aramaic translation in the Neviim, v'chol idan datun avodim reuti ani mekabel tzluteichem. Wherever you daven, right? You ask for me, from something from me, I accept your prayers. Ushmi rabba mitkadesh al yedeichon, and my name is sanctified greatly through your efforts, utzlot techon, and your prayers, kekorban, like a sacrifice, tekikadami, before me, v'chein peresha mikra. And this is how the pasuk is explained. V'lama atem mechalalim shemi, why do you deny my name, v'alo gadol hu bagoyim, even the goyim understand that I am great. V'ani ahavti v'chibati aleichem, shebekol makom shatem mitpalalim lefanai, af begola muktar umugash hu lishmi. That tefillah, even in the Golah, even though it was originally, tefillah might have been connected to the avodah of the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, after all, that's what the Rabbah says, that the word avodah either means, you know, avodat tefillah or avodat Beit HaMikdash. So you would think there was some kind of connection, but here the pshat in the pasuk is that God accepts the tefillah even though the avodah is missing. You don't have the Beit HaMikdash, but it's b'kol makom shehu. This is like also a programmatic Rashi. And the Panim Yafot mentions this pasuk in Malachi. He doesn't mention the Rashi, but it's hard to imagine that he didn't know the Rashi. I mean, he certainly knew this Rashi. So this idea of klalim upratitim, which is, both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael agree, that there was a period of time when they studied the klali. There's a machloket, a different opinion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael about when the pratim were taught to Bnei Israel. According to Rabbi Akiva, everything was at Har Sinai. According to Rabbi Yishmael, the klalim came at Har Sinai, and the pratim came when you needed them, when they had to be taught to you. When you come to Eretz Israel, then the pratim came. But both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael agree apparently that in learning there was a lag, right? They learned the klalim until they needed to learn the pratim, and from that, according to the Panim Yafot, there's this independent idea that there's a rationale to learning Torah when you can't keep the Torah. And that was rejuvenated after the Churban Beit HaMikdash. It was just like before the building of the Beit HaMikdash, they learned the klalim of Beit HaMikdash, but didn't have to learn the pratim until they saw the Beit HaMikdash actually going up. But after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, this was adopted. This idea was adopted by us, by Bnei Yisrael, and validated the idea of tefillah. Like you say, how could you daven when you can't do what the Torah tells you to do? Right? How can you daven if God says give a korban tamid and you don't give a korban tamid? So it's sort of like a little chutzpah to go to daven. I mean, it doesn't really make any sense, except that you have this, according to what we've learned, you have this idea that exists in the world that there is the Torah of the klal and the Torah of the Prat. And even though we can't do the Prat, we can go back to the Klal and learn the Torah of the Klal, and that seems to be good enough. That doesn't. And that's what Rashi said, that since you do that, since you, Bnei Yisrael, do that, God is open to accepting the Tfilot of Bnei Yisrael. Okay. I mean, there's a nice Ramban. Rambam, you know, says you shouldn't forget Har Sinai. No, the Rambam has this idea, there are mitzvot of Zachor. It's at the other end of the Siddur. Like we talked about Tfilas HaShachar, right? That part of the Siddur. If you look at the end of the Siddur, where it says Ani Mamin, after Shachris. Right, you know, it says Ani Mamin. You know, they have all that stuff at the end that nobody says? I believe. I mean, maybe somebody says it, but no, not too common. Right, so in there are also the six zachors that you have to remember, things that you have to remember. So what are the things you have to remember, which the Ramban thinks is important? And the way you remember is by saying it every day. Even though, generally speaking, halachic memory is a year. In other words, the lotishchach of Amalek Zachor is Asher Asalcha, Amalek lo tishkach. Amalek is once a year. Right? There's a special event once a year called Parshat Zachor. I think everybody knows that, right? And Parshat Zachor takes place once a year because that's the rule of forgetting. If you don't remember something for a year, you forgot it. So, nevertheless, the Rabban thinks you should remember Har Sinai every day. And that's how it all got into the Siddur. Because there's a remembering modus for certain mitzvot. They had a zohar about what happened to Miriam and a zohar. You have like six zohars, which are a different topic. So he says that the Har Sinai, the fact that the Torah comes from Har Sinai, somehow, we don't know still what exactly came from Har Sinai, what came after Har Sinai, but since the Torah is attributed to Har Sinai, and that in the Gilgul of things, it was called in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that's Torah min HaShamayim, which is hard to define. The Mishnah just says that if you're a denier of Torah min HaShamayim, then Elo Chelik Lolam Abba, you'll be punished for denying Torah min HaShamayim, but it doesn't make clear exactly what Torah min HaShamayim means, like which Torah, how much Torah, what is it that Moshe Rabbeinu did actually receive. All of that remains a little bit unclear. Okay. Have a wonderful whatever's coming up. Oh, next week I was asked to give something to speak about Yom Yerushalayim. It's Motzei Yom Yerushalayim, right? But it's not like other Motzei's where you have to eat. You don't have to eat. So we're going to have the shir anyway. I mean, in spite of the fact that it could be a joyous moment. It was. I mean, actually, Yom Yerushalayim lost out. It would have been good. It would have been a good thing if the Rabbanim would have had a little guts. But they didn't.
Guts to
what?
Guts for what? To keep our
Rabbanim? Yeah, to make it into a thing.
Oh,
yeah. Outside of Yerushalayim.
Zero. In Yerushalayim also zero. It's zero. They bring kids from these B'nai Akiva high schools by bus. They bring them, well, it's a day off, and they spend the money. Somebody in the government gives them money for the buses, and they hang around and eat falafel in the old city. Which is not exactly a spiritual moment.
What should the Rabbanut have done?
What?
What should the Rabbanut have done?
Should have cried. Enjoy, I mean. They should have. During the Six-Day War, this is where the tanks came through the Shar Mandelbaum. And I had the privilege of being there. Miriam, well, you were also there, right? There used to be something called the Mandelbaum Gate, which was the border between our side of Jerusalem and the Jordanian side of Jerusalem. So if you had certain passports, certain kinds of passports, you could go from Israel to Jordan, to just walk through the Mandelbaum Gate. So, if you were a galach, a Catholic priest, you had even if you were American, you had some kind of also galach passport. So everything was very primitive in those days, before 1967. It was very primitive. So I had a friend who was a galach. And he used to go to the store, he used to go to the Mandelbaum Gate and go to the grocery store and buy American beer and then come back. And he'd sit around, So that was like, in Israel there was no beer. You couldn't get anything alcoholic in Israel. Because the Rabbanut in 1900 or something, they said, well, it's chametz. So they assured making alcoholic beverages in Israel. You could only get brandy. The only thing alcoholic was something that was not chametz, for some reason.
And not drinkable either.
Well, it didn't take the place of scotch, that's for sure. So then they discovered importing. I guess a new thing after the Six-Day War. And so anybody could cross the Mandalay Gate after the Six-Day War. The point I'm making is that when the tanks came down from the north, they came down from Shechem into Yerushalayim, they couldn't fit into the old city, so they came to the Mandalay Gate. So we were there at the Mandalay Gate. You had to see these ladies, these Mea Sharim ladies, running with pots of soup to feed the guys in the tanks. I mean, you know, like you can see they had never done this before. They didn't know exactly, you know, you would think they bring sandwiches. Nope, pots with soup in it. You know, imagine spilling it all over the tanks. They were really happy. They were happy. So I said to the rabbi, look, they didn't have to do anything. They just had to say, we're happy, instead of saying, we're unhappy, which is what they did. They said, we're unhappy, we don't know what it should be, and we don't know how we're going to deal with it.
That's a problem.
So that was the end. That was the end. They nipped it in the bud. It was gone. Gone before it even arrived. But it was amazing. Even skeptical people like me were amazed. I mean, it was like, what do they call that? It was a special moment. It was something you couldn't avoid it. Couldn't avoid it. It was just wonderful. Just wonderful. And then, you know, the people started, Shaila, should you say Hallel or Bracha? I'd say Hallel or Bracha, you know, like you couldn't overcome. You just couldn't overcome and be happy. Had to make trouble. But that's the way we are. But this was such a big deal that you might have thought that we would be able to overcome. But we didn't. So today the result is that Yom Yerushalayim doesn't exist. The reason that Yom Yerushalayim doesn't exist is because it's very close to Yom HaTzmaut. Of course, for those people, Yom HaTzmaut also doesn't exist. But they could say that the reason Yom Yerushalayim doesn't exist is because of Yom HaTzmaut. And Yom HaTzmaut truly, because it was controlled by the secular world, it's not a ta'ana, you know, a person is a person, you want that. But I mean, they really made a mess of it. I mean, I admit that the Charedim and the Datiyim didn't know what to do with themselves. But the secular guys, they really messed up. There's no like depth to anything. Nothing was noteworthy, except for the Bible context. And Ben Gurion was always angry that the winners were always religious.
You know, now he's
happy. Until this year.
This year, the guy he went to a non-religious school, but he was wearing a yarmulke. Why was he wearing a yarmulke? Must be a little bit religious, though. Yeah. No? I don't know. Anyway, but Ben Gurion, Amos Chacham, who won the first Bible contest, was the winner of the first Bible contest. He showed up without shoes. No, he didn't own a pair of shoes. You know, he was, and he'd come a long way. He went to university. He got a doctorate, but he, and he wrote the Moser of Cook. He wrote the commentary on Tehillim, which is very, really a classic. It's something wonderful. You know, three volumes on Tehillim. And he wrote other things as well for them. But I think he showed up without shoes. He didn't, you know, and that was also embarrassing to Ben-Gurion, you know, because he was in charge. How could it be that one of his men, you know, doesn't have shoes? But he won the Bible contest. It was no contest. But now they have it worked out that there's a little bit of competition. You'd have pretests and further pretests, and they more or less get people on the same level.
And they wipe out the score partway through, so everybody started from zero.
Well, you know, but it doesn't. It's not something that people are interested in. They're not, you know. So they somehow, I think that if you're thinking about unity, or like not real unity is ridiculous. Disparity is better than unity. But if you're thinking about a moment, like you say, let's do something together, let's go have a picnic together, they can work it out. He just couldn't work it out. In the original Yom Ha'atzmaut Machzor, which was put out by Kibbutz Adati, I don't know who did it. It said something like, it said the mitzvat hayom v'tzeit l'chei kateva. How can you say a thing like that? But they, so that, you know, so that died away. I mean, nobody looks at that anymore, unless they happen to have it. So Korin put out a new machzor on Yom Ha'atzmaut. It's okay, you know, Benny Lau wrote something. It's an introduction. Somebody else wrote, I don't remember who. Maybe Steinsaltz. I don't remember who it was. It's okay. You know. I go to the great synagogue in Yom Ha'atzmaut because the best show in town. If you've never been to the great synagogue, you should try it. Try it. And it's free. And you don't have to daven. Nobody davens.
You can come to Yeshiva at the Kotel, Yom Yerushalayim, 7 o'clock in the morning, Tfilat Shacharit, with the accompaniment of the Ramatayim men's
choir. Say what? What?
Tfilat Shacharit, with the accompaniment of the Ramatayim men's choir.
Okay.
And
Yom
Yerushalayim?
Yeah.
It's after the 4th, I mean on Wednesday?
Yeah. Wednesday morning, 7 o'clock.
It's by the Trump.
He's gone.
No, but
he's gone.
Yeah, the great synagogue only works at night.
No relationship one way or the other.
No,
we would have had it anyway.
Okay, are we finished? It's not going on, is it?
Yeah,
it is?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean,
did I say anything bad?
No.
The Revenant's going to be here for you.
I remember a shiur that you gave a million years ago about Yom Yerushalayim. So you said that Yom HaTzmaut, about the Hallel issue. Yom HaTzmaut, in fact, it started a war. Yom Yerushalayim, there's no excuse for not saying that.
Look, Chaim Shmuel Levitz, Chronon of Bracha, was felt that he was personally saved in the war because a mortar fell on Mir and blew up the roof, and he was sitting there. So he used to make a Sudat Hodayah for himself and his family on Yom Yerushalayim, but the madness got a hold of him. You know, like they drove him crazy. How
but
could you do it?
It?
No, Yom Yerushalayim.